Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It's Coach Joe Ledford on WDCU Daniel Clark Let's Talk Radio. It's May 15th. Hard to believe that the month of May is already half over. It's 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. That means that it's time for the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford Let's Talk Sports Show on WDCU Daniel Clark Let's Talk Radio. That is on the internet on Blog Talk Radio. And I don't mind telling you, I was in a mediation today all day, so I don't have my usual energy tonight, but I'll try to muddle through this show. And I'm a little bit tired, and I'm looking forward to hearing from some of you tonight and kind of take the burden off me. If you want to call in, please feel to do so on that Players guest call-in line. That's Players Sporting Goods guest call-in line. That number is 888-689-4061. And this portion of tonight's show is indeed brought to you by the good folks over at Players Sporting Goods, 5737 North Graham Street. Going into Players, I say this a lot on this show, but it's just the absolute truth. There is nothing like a sporting goods store. They, you know, I was in the store the other day, and I noticed that one of the more popular sports going on right now is Frisbee golf. And, you know, we were talking about golf on this show the other night, but they got Frisbee golf out there, and the equipment and the stuff that goes with that is pretty remarkable. They have a hole set up. You can buy the portable one, and it looks pretty interesting to me. And they got all kinds of interesting stuff in Players, and I'm joined by Ricky Clark right now. Coach, I hope you had a better day than I did.
Well, not too bad for an old guy.
Well, for an old guy, I feel like an old guy. And, you know, last night we were talking about all kinds of things. We never got around to talking about the NBA, and this is usually the point of this show where we get into some high school stuff. But I'm finding that if we don't cover what we say we're going to talk about up front, we get going in about 1,500 different directions. So, Ricky, let's start with the NBA because everything is going pretty much according to the way that I thought it was going to go, not necessarily the teams, but – you know, currently Miami is leading Chicago 3-1. Indiana is leading New York 3-1. That's a shocker to me. You know, Memphis is leading Oklahoma City 3-1. I'm stunned by that. And San Antonio is up on Golden State 3-2, having won that game last night, 109-71. You know, the Pacers beat the Knicks last night, Ricky, and you know these scores just aren't that close. I mean, you know, it was an 11-point win last night for Indiana, and, you know, I jokingly called it a flop last week when we were talking about the flopping rule that they have in the NBA, but I know that Miami and Chicago is playing as we speak. I have not had a chance to see that score because I'm literally just getting home from work. How about you, Ricky? Have you got an update for us on the Miami-Chicago game? Have you seen a score on that?
Yeah, Chicago, surprisingly, Chicago is up 44-40. They've outscored Miami. Miami jumped off to an 18-point lead in the first half, and Chicago has basically outscored them 23-24-5. So I still think it's over. But
might not be over tonight, huh? Well, what's Dwayne Wade's status? Is he playing tonight? I mean, I've literally just got into the house. I haven't had a chance to check a whole lot of anything because the last time I checked that series, the big question was, you know, how is his knee and was he going to be able to go and how is that going to affect them for the rest of the playoffs? Because, you know, very clearly Oklahoma City has been affected by the loss of their point guard, Westbrook, and Chicago has had to deal with the same issue with the loss of Rose. And now there's some question about just – you know, how ready, you know, Wade is going to be to go. Have you heard anything about
he's
that?
He's playing. Playing.
Pardon me?
Wade's playing. Actually, not playing bad. You know, I know he wishes his knee wasn't hurt, but he's doing pretty good. He's playing tonight.
Well, coaches, things are shaping up. It really is starting to look like Indiana and Miami are going to be playing in the East. And, you know, Golden State's got a big mountain to climb to overcome San Antonio. And, you know, Memphis is kind of having their way with Oklahoma City right now. The scores are respectable. You know, on Monday, Memphis won that game 103-97 in overtime, and they won game 3, 87-81. And they won game 2, 99-93. So they've taken three in a row from Oklahoma City. Do you think it's just been too much pressure and too much to try to carry that team by Kevin Durant?
You know what, Joe? The Grizzlies have always played good defense, but Randolph and Casal, they're too big. They're just too big on the inside. You know, when you can throw that ball down in the paint on either side of the lane or down in the bottom or at the top of the key, and those guys produce, it's hard to beat them. And then you take the fact that, you know, now you can't drive the ball down deep into the paint because they got two bigs there. If one misses you, the other one's bound to get you. And that's all they did the other night. They just walked it down the court, threw it down in the paint. They either scored 2 points or they went to the foul line. I think that they're just, at this point, yeah, they're hurt. Oklahoma is missing that point guard, but if they're running two at Kevin Durant and nobody's stepping up, you know, obviously you're running two people at me. I should be able to get down into the paint. But when they do, they're getting their shot blocks or shot altered. And I think the bigs is making a difference in this game. And Randolph is really contributing. He's their new banger.
Well, it's it's interesting to see that play out. And I'll have to admit to being surprised by the Indiana-New York series. You know, in that first game, Indiana won that game, 102-95. And then in game two, I think the Knicks team that everybody was looking to show up won that game by 26 points, beating Indiana 105-79. But game three and, game four, those have been 11-point wins for the Pacers. And, you know, obviously those games are a little bit closer than that because, you know, you get some giveaway points right at the end while teams are, you know, trying to make some things happen. But, you know, Coach, I think the Pacers are really kind of the surprise team of this NBA playoffs. I mean, you got to figure any team that makes the semifinals has a chance to move on. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be there. But I really thought that with New York coming off the injuries, you know, their folks back healthy, especially after that Game 2 performance, I was looking to see the Knicks take care of business there, and it's going in the other direction. You know, they got that huge game tomorrow. It's in New York, but, we'll just have to see how that one plays out because, you know, if it went to seven games, it would go New York, at Indiana, and then at New York. So, you know, I mean, it's tough to win three straight games in any best-of-seven series. At that point, you really are like, it's like being back in college. When you're down 3-1, it's one and done. Now, that motivates a lot of people, and it certainly gives them all the incentive in the world to play a little bit harder. But, you know, Coach, can the Knicks come back? I mean, do they have the firepower? Or is Indiana just playing too good a team game for the Knicks to overcome a 3-1 deficit?
You know, Joe, they have the firepower to come back. But, Smith, who's an outstanding basketball player, he hadn't really played well since he got tossed for throwing that elbow. He has basically done nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. So he didn't do anything last night. If he's off, so that they don't have to double team him, now they can double team Carmelo. Carmelo wasn't off last night, but he had two people hanging on him every time he got the ball. They're bumping him off of the screens and everything because Smith is not making shots. So anytime both of your big guns are not scoring, you know, for New York, it's done. It's done. Even if they win one, and I know they got to go in and say, you know, we don't need to win three games in a row. We need to win one at a time. Yeah, that's true. You need to win one at a time. But if you're playing good defense on me, and forcing me to miss shots, which is, I think, is the case with Carmelo, then that's one thing. But if Smith is out there one-on-one with the guy and he's missing, you know, 10-foot jumpers, he's missing 12-foot jumpers, with one guy guarding him, they're in trouble. So they haven't had to double-team him the last two games. He's basically out there, one guy shutting him down. So if both of them don't come out red-hot, the next game, they're going home. They're going home fast.
What do you, have you been surprised by the San Antonio Golden State series? I will tell you, I have a little bit, and here's why. I just felt like the young legs were going to get it done. Now, I think you probably picked San Antonio because you went with the experience, as I recall, on the show a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, if you take a look at how those games have gone, the first one was just a great two overtime game, 129-127. Then Golden State came back to win game two, 191. Then San Antonio went up 102-92. Then in game four, Golden State won 97-87 in overtime. And then last night, you know, San Antonio wins that game 109-91. You know, I mean, that's an 18-point win. You know, I mean, what does that tell you? Was that just an anomaly, or do you feel like Golden State might be out of juice at this point? Because, you know, some coach, the deeper you get into the playoffs, especially if you got a lot of young kids, it becomes pressure city. And there's nothing like being in the playoffs as a young player where, you know, you start thinking about the implications of your first or second time in that. And, you know, and Golden State's being carried by really, you know, two North Carolina kids. Am I right about that?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, they're almost in the same situation as the Knicks are. You know, they got a little physical with Curry the other night, and Thomas Harrison Barnes played well, but when Curry and Thomas is not on, it's a done deal, which it was last night. And then they stopped pushing the ball. You know, we had already said that. You know, if you get those young legs out there and let them run up and down the court, San Antonio, the Spurs just took that away from them. You know, they get the ball, they're not in a hurry, they're not trying to fast break the ball, they're getting it up court, throwing it down in the post, kicking it back out, Parker played well, that type thing. I still think this one can go either way, though. I still think this one can go either way. It's like a 15-round boxing match, you know. We'll see if Golden State counterpunch tonight, because they really forced Curry off his spot, and he got a little physical with him, but it wasn't dirty basketball. They just got a little physical with him. And, you know, you live by the three, you die by the three. And, you know, if Golden State, my three-point is nothing but a layup. Those guys come down on a fast break and kick the ball back out to take a three. That's scary. They're not shooting that high percentage shots at all. But they've done it all year, and they got where they are now. So I think this one could possibly go in either direction.
Well, I hope it does. I mean, to tell you the truth, Coach, I wish that every one of these series would go to Game 7. I just think there's something special about a full series. And, you know, I like it when the World Series goes 7 games. I like it when the NBA Final goes 7 games. And, you know, I think back to some of those, you know, Lakers-Celtics 7-game series. One year it's Boston, the next year it's L.A. And that to me, in my lifetime, I'll have to say, as much as I enjoyed watching Michael Jordan do what he did, being from North Carolina, playing at North Carolina, being, you know, the greatest player in the league maybe ever, I'm starting to think that LeBron might challenge him for that. But, you know, as much as I enjoyed watching a local young man do well, I'll have to admit, to me, it was really special watching Magic Johnson, James Worthy, you know, Jabbar, you know, Larry Bird, the Chief, McHale, you know, I'm watching those guys go at it. You could really look forward to not just a 7-game series, but a great 7-game series where, you know, these guys, they played hard, Coach, and they played tough, but you could tell that was an incredible amount of respect and admiration that everybody on the floor had for each other. And to me, the NBA has just not been the same for me personally than it was during that stretch where, you know, especially, you know, the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird thing, going back to the time when Michigan State beat Indiana State for the national championship. And, you know, that was just a special sports story. And I miss those days. And I just don't have that same feel for the National Basketball Association today that I did then. I didn't identify with it quite as much. And, of course, it was great seeing, you know, James Worthy, you know, from Gastonia, you know, doing so well in the NBA. And you know, I miss that time, and I do hope that whoever we get for these East and Western finals, that we can get a 7-game series out of it. But, Coach, I just don't see it. I think San Antonio is probably going to win that series. I think they're going to run out of juice against Memphis. And I think you could put an all-star team together to play Miami. I think Miami would still win the East. But that presupposes that Dwayne Wade is healthy enough to play. And, you know, Coach, one of the debates that's been going on in the sports world, when you're up 3-1 and you're dogging Chicago as they are, why play Wade? And, you know, and it goes back kind of like the RG3 situation, you know, because there are a lot of folks that know a lot more about this game than I do that really feel like Miami becomes vulnerable if Wade isn't able to play. Even if he's only at 80%, there are a lot of folks that say all of a sudden Miami becomes vulnerable. Are you buying into that?
You know, Joe, with shooters like Wade and slashers, if you know, and I know they need to rest him, but if you set him too long, you know, he's a game away from being sharp again. You know, I think going into this game, what they were trying to do is to see exactly how Chalmers was going to play and the other kid that replaces Chalmers, see how they were going to play. Neither one of those kids are playing well tonight. So Wade is still out there. I think they felt like if they could get those guys on track early in the game, then they would sit Wade. That way you accomplish two things. You're keeping them a little sharp and you're resting that knee altogether. He'd had to play, and it's a good thing he's not sitting on the bench in a suit, because Mario Chalmers is not doing anything tonight at all. And we, you know, you were talking about the Lakers and Celtics rivalry. You know, those teams did not wait till the playoffs to hate each other. You know, they respected each other, but they hated each other year round. And, you know, on the occasion that they did have a regular season game, it was played like a playoff. It really was. Larry Bird, one of the purest shooters that they ever played a game, couldn't jump 2 inches off the floor.
No.
But he knew you wanted to block his shot so bad, he'd give you a little head fake, and you went flying, and he'd knock it down. And Magic Johnson, one of the all-time competitors. You know, it was showtime. It was showtime in L.A. When anybody played, because you got a North Carolina boy, Worthy, out there on the corner, and it was just great basketball with him and Magic Johnson.
You know, Sam Perkins was on some of those teams, been able to go inside and outside.
That rivalry doesn't exist now, you know, between those two teams, because, you know, they've added so many teams to the league, and, you know, 84 games, and it's not there. I'm trying to think of two teams that are playing now that even come close to that, and I can't put two teams to mind that their rivalry at this present time even come close to the L.A. Boston rivalry. I just can't. Can you?
No, I don't think that exists in basketball. And, you know, Coach, I think that, you know, you said they hated each other, and they hated losing to each other. But I will tell you, I never felt like, you know, we hear so much discussion about the hard, dirty foul and, you know, the cheap shots and whatnot. I don't remember any of that. I mean, you know, there were some hard fouls, but it was business with those guys. It was never personal, you know. And as you watch some of these specials that are on about some of the greats that were on that team, and you hear them talking about the off-court relationship, you know, telephone mainly, relationship they had with each other, I miss that time. Interesting thing, the all-rookie team came out, and it's, you know, the state of North Carolina came out pretty well in that. Actually, the state of North Carolina has done okay in today's news, because on that first team, we had the NBA Rookie of the Year out of Portland, Damian Lillard. He was first team. Harrison Barnes made the first team. He's with Golden State. Washington's Bradley Beal. New Orleans' Anthony Davis. Davis being the first player taken. And Cleveland's Deion Walters. That was the first team. And Kid Gilchrist, you know, for the Bobcats, was on the second team. He actually finished eighth in the vote getting. Detroit's Andre Drummond. Toronto's Jonas. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this kid's name. Valanciunas. Detroit's Kyle Singler, you know, Kyle was from Duke, and Cleveland's Tyler Zeller from North Carolina. So kids with North Carolina connections, you know, Kid Gilchrist from the Bobcats, Harrison Barnes from the University of North Carolina, Tyler Zeller from North Carolina, and Kyle Singler at Duke. So four of the 10 rookies, you know, all rookie team, are either playing in North Carolina now or played for a North Carolina team, you know, Duke and North Carolina, you know, this past season. So, you know, that's I guess these are going to be the stars of tomorrow, and it's good to see Harrison Barnes doing as well as he has. All frankness, though, I wish he'd have done a little better at North Carolina. I think he's the kind of guy who actually does a lot better at the pro game than he did at the college game, and that kind of, you know, makes me want to talk a little bit about, you know, Anthony Wiggins. I read in today's paper that some folks say that he will definitively be the number one pick in next year's draft. And, you know, that makes his decision to go to Kansas really a smart decision for him, because if that's in fact accurate, Coach, what this kid is doing is he's probably saying, I got one shot to get to the Final Four. I got one shot to be a national champion. And Kansas probably gives him the best chance to do that. With all the ties, you know, his dad having played at Florida State, you know, the sentimental choice would have been for him to go down there and be a Seminole. But, you know, Florida State is not going to the Final Four next year, even with Anthony Wiggins. As a matter of fact, they probably wouldn't even win the ACC with, Andrew Wiggins. But so his decision to go to Kansas, where they have that open spot for him and that really great team coming back. And, you know, Kansas has become a mainstay in that Sweet 16, Final Eight. In a lot of ways, they kind of remind me of those old Dean Smith teams that every time you turn around, you know, used to be North Carolina was in the Sweet 16, I think about 20 straight years, which is amazing. People don't appreciate. You know, Coach, I mentioned Dean Smith to kids today, and they don't have a clue who I'm talking about.
That is
something, because to those of us in our generation, he was college basketball. But, you know, you've had a day now to reflect on, you know, Andrew Wiggins. You know, how do you feel about his choosing Kansas over Kentucky, North Carolina, and Florida State? And tell me about what you see his upside for not choosing the three that he didn't and his upside for going to Kansas.
Joe, you know what, if his intentions, and I agree with you, I think that's what's going on, is to turn pro next year, I'm a North Carolina guy. I'm glad he did go to Kansas. You can't build a program around athletes that come into your program for 1 year. You just can't. And you know, we had this discussion a long time ago when we first started this show. You can't. And you go back and you look at the teams. Just look at the teams that are in the Final Eight. You know, there is no teams in the Final Eight with a starting lineup full of freshmen, because that's basically what I think college basketball is coming down to. And I thought, yeah, right, maybe, good gracious, maybe 2 or 3 weeks after we did the show about these kids coming and staying 1 year, I saw the commissioner for the NBA, and he passed the buck. He said it was not the NBA's problem, that the colleges have to take care of that problem, that the colleges have to take care of that problem. I disagree with that. I think if you don't give me an outlet, then I stay where I'm at for 3 years. The NFL does not give these kids an outlet. The NFL say, you do 3 years, you can come out after your junior year, football season's over. So even if I turn junior and my season has not started, I have to play through my season before they even think about letting me try out in the NFL. So, but the basketball commissioner is passing the buck. It's not my problem. So Wiggins going to Kansas, I'm fine with that. He because he's not going to be there but a year. That gives Roy Williams in Carolina an opportunity to go after another player that's going to give him 3-4 years there, and you go back and look at the teams that have done well. Those teams are not crammed full of freshmen, because, like you said, it's the exact same situation with Golden State. you got rookies there. These guys have not been in the league long enough to even mentally match up with the old Spurs. It's the same way in college basketball. It's the exact same way. You put your veterans out there, and you put your rookies out there. The veterans will find a way to beat them every single time.
You know, it's interesting that Coach Roy Williams has had a tough time with Kansas. As far as I know, he's 0-3 against Kansas, and you know, got blown out by them in the Final Four. Actually, they got down by about 33 points, cut it to 4, ended up losing that game. This was in the Final Four the year before they won the national championship with Tyler Hansbrough and that crowd. But then, you know, then like 2 years ago they got put out by Kansas. This year they got put out by Kansas. And now, you know, Kansas has out-recruited, you know, old Roy for Andrew Wiggins. And, you know, there's a question being bandied about, and a lot of folks says, has Coach Williams lost his recruiting touch, you know? Because, Coach, in the last 3 years, he has only signed one top 10 prospect, and that was James Michael McAdoo, who's, you know, frankly, I don't think is playing like a top 10 prospect, but what do I know? But, you know, it does seem that the last couple of years, Coach Williams has not landed that blue-chip recruit, and whereas Kansas, Duke, and Kentucky are just really outpacing North Carolina, at least in the all-star recruiting, you know, prospects. And yet, you know, Coach, I honestly just don't get excited about recruiting. I don't. And the reason I say that is because until a kid actually gets on campus and shows what he can do, he's just another name as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, it's one thing to be great in high school. And, you know, we were talking about linemen. You know, I think linemen are the hardest guys to draft and to recruit for college football, because, you know, you get some of these big old kids that are used to pushing lesser talents around. That doesn't necessarily tell you how good they're going to be when the guy that they, you know, lines up across from them is just as good, just as quick. If they're a veteran or a, you know, upperclassman, they're going to be physically stronger just because they have, you know, that extra year or two of the, you know, the weight training and the fitness training that they have at these colleges. So, you know, Tom Sorensen wrote a piece in today's Observer saying that the recruiting monster is of our own doing, and that is absolutely the truth. I mean, I hope Andrew Wiggins is everything that he's made out to be. I can understand why he would not choose Kentucky, because if he wants to be the number one draft choice next year, he don't want to have to go up there and share the ball with that great Kentucky recruiting class of last year and the one they got this year. You know, there's only one basketball, and you can only play five guys at a time. And Florida State, I just didn't see Florida State as being anything other than probably where he – probably the reason that they were in the mix was just because of the family tie there. But, you know, Ricky, I just – you know, every now and then a recruit comes along that is so good. You know, take Clowney down in South Carolina. You could tell when that kid was a senior in high school that he – you know, he had all the tools. I mean, he had the tools as a senior in high school, kind of like, you know, Madison Bumgarner at South Caldwell. You could just take a look at that kid. You know, Madison had that big league body when he was in high school, and there's some kids that are like that. But for the most part, it goes back to something that I say a lot, and I'll keep saying it. The only good thing I can say about a freshman or a rookie is that next year they're not a freshman and they're not a rookie. And, you know, so I'm really surprised that we as adults just sit around and, you know, hang our hat and go into depression or elation based upon what a 17-year-old kid says about where he or she's going to go to college. I'm a little bit more interested in, you know, seeing how they do on October 15th when they actually, you know, start, you know, hitting the court. I mean, I heard a local guy say that with Wiggins, North Carolina could be a national championship contender. You know, North Carolina's going to be just fine. You know, all this business about Roy losing these recruits. You know, Coach Williams, he's been doing it for a long, long time. And North Carolina basketball is going to be just fine. And I think that just because they lost out on the Wiggins kid, you know, they'll be okay. I'm frankly more excited about them signing Kennedy Meeks, a kid who we know, a kid who went to our school. And that's the career that I want to follow, because if there's a better young man going into his freshman year of basketball at any school than Kennedy. Coach Clark, I don't know who that kid is, and I'm more excited about the fact that our player is going to be wearing Carolina blue than Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, and you know you won't see him coming out after his freshman year because he's going there to get a degree.
He is.
Play
and
basketball.
He's not
going there to play basketball and maybe get a degree later. You know, I was sitting here while you were talking. I was thinking about the McDonald's All-Star Game with the top high school ball players, and you know there was a few kids on the floor that was playing team basketball and had a team concept. But most of the hot doggers, most of the kids that plan on going on to college and playing 1 year, and if they had a good night at that McDonald's All-Star Game, then they would bypass college and take a shot in the pros. So, you know, I very seldom watch it all the way through anyway. It lasts, for that All-Star Game, I may have lasted 10 minutes. I was like, it's I got the ball. I need to go one on five, dunk the ball. I got the ball. I need to go 1-on-5 and shoot a 3. You know, those kids were not interested in winning. They was interested in their own personal little highlight reel. And it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't even worth watching. It really wasn't. So when you go back and you start with this kid signed here and that kid signed there and this kid signed here, you're getting him for 1 year. Good luck trying to build a program off of the – I don't care if it is the best basketball player in the country. You don't have but 1 year to do what you should have 4 years to do.
I think you're right about that. And, you know, it's I said it was a good week for kids from North Carolina. On this week's regional Sports Illustrated cover, we have Matt Harvey, who was an All-American at North Carolina. Pitched for the Tar Heels 2008 to 2010, freshman All-American and first-team All-ACC in his junior year. He's 24 in his second season and leads the major leagues with a 1.44 earned run average. And so he's off to a great start. And, of course, 2 weeks ago, Stephon Curry, who grew up here in Charlotte, played at Charlotte Christian and then Davidson, so, you know, was on the cover. And, yeah, so you got to say it's been a good time for North Carolina athletes promoting themselves and being recognized, especially with those four that are on that, you know, all-rookie team. And so, you know, Coach, the truth of the matter is when it comes to, you know, North Carolina is a good state for, you know, athletes. And I'd like to shift a little bit of directions a little bit right now. I was talking to our producer, Andrew Merce, last night, and we were talking about North Carolina talent, you know, because we had talked about, you know, some of the great high school players that we had seen. But, you know, I mean, Ricky, you think about the kids who have played basketball in North Carolina. High school basketball in North Carolina. You know, I'm gonna go back and, you know, help remember a few who some of these kids were. You know, Henry Bibby, that great point guard from UCLA, was from Western North Carolina. David Thompson, maybe one of the greatest college basketball players ever. Okay?
Another Shelby.
Ford. Pardon?
A little Shelby guy.
Mm-hmm. Crest High School. And, you know, actually, he might have gone to Chase. I think he did go to Chase, but he's from Shelby. You know, I mean, James Worthy from Gastonia, Bobby Jones, Walter Davis from South Mecklenburg, Lou Massey from South Mecklenburg, Cedric Maxwell from Kinston, Tall Tommy Burleson, you know, Eric Sleepy Floyd, you know, just Buck Williams. You know, Buck Williams had a great college and NBA career. And John Lucas, I mean, I'm sure you remember, you know, Lucas grew up at Durham, great point guard at, you know, the University of Maryland, had a good NBA career. Monty Towers from North Carolina. I mean, you just think about how blessed we've been in this state. Antoine Jameson, you know, Jerry Stackhouse. And I mean, you could, that's an NBA All-Star team, the names that I've just given you. I mean, you think about those are guys that really have made a name in the game, and I'm sure there are 10 guys, Coach, that I'm probably leaving off right now because the list just goes on and on. I mean, who've I left off that list?
I was trying to think, because you did name Phil Ford.
Mm-hmm.
You named Buck Williams.
Mm-hmm.
God, there was another kid that came to mind, and it just left.
Stephon Curry.
Curry.
I mean, you know, the current bunch of youngsters who played at North Carolina. I mean, you know, the Plumlee boys who are going to play in the league. You know, they're from Raleigh, and you know, it is just absolutely amazing to me how little North Carolina has produced. And those just aren't good basketball players, Coach Clark. Those are great basketball players. And if you added to that list, the list of players who played in North Carolina as well but didn't grow up here. Oh, I'm Michael Jordan. I forgot to mention Michael Jordan.
There you go.
I knew there was somebody I was forgetting. Hey, let's just forget about Michael. But I mean, you know, Ricky, I tell you this, when people say this is a basketball state, this is really a basketball state. And you know, the one thing that I'm really miss, though, I miss Wake Forest being as good as they were in the 80s, and I miss North Carolina State being as good as they were, you know, when Coach Norm Sloan, Coach Jim Valvano running that program, because those Carolina State games, I mean, you used to start looking forward to them a week in advance, and you know, so, and Wake Forest used to be like that. And this is back when the ACC was a 7-team conference, and then you added Georgia Tech to take it to 8. But you know, back in those days, Coach, the ACC, in my opinion, at that time was truly the best basketball conference in the nation, and probably during that time the best basketball league in, you know, of all time. And think about the coaches. You had Coach Dean Smith at North Carolina, okay? Lefty Driesell was at Maryland. Terry Holland was at Virginia. Bill Foster was at Duke, okay? Then Mike Krzyzewski. And then you had the Bill Foster at Clemson. You had Carl Tacy at Wake Forest. You had Bobby Cremins at Georgia Tech. You had Norman Sloan, then Jim Valvano at North Carolina State. Now, Ricky, it's been a long time since any of those guys have coached, with the exception of Krzyzewski, who's still around. But can you name for me the head basketball coach at Wake Forest or at Clemson?
Can't do it.
Or at Maryland. I can't. And, you know, they used to call that a coach's conference, and it truly was a coach's conference. And to this day, I mean, 20-something years later, I still remember the name of all of those coaches. And that tells you, you know, what a great conference the ACC used to be in basketball. And you know, Coach, I just don't think it is anymore. I think for the most part, you've had the ACC is living off of what North Carolina and Duke have done. You know that? I mean, other than that, who in the ACC has really been a national presence really for the last 10 years?
Yeah, and playing consistently, you know. They add teams to the league every year, but not all of them play consistently.
No, they don't. Time to talk a little bit of baseball, because I promised some people that we would talk a little bit of baseball. So we're going to do that right now, and then we're going to switch to high school, because there was a lot of high school activity yesterday. So here's what we're going to tell you about baseball. The Yankees are 2 games up in the American League East. Detroit is 1.5 games up in the American League Central. Texas is 5 games up in the American League West. And in that division, the Yankees have the best winning percentage. They're 641. Atlanta, after starting about 16-1, is now 22-16. They're leading the American League East. St. Louis is leading the National League East. St. Louis is leading the National League Central. And San Francisco, you know, our good friend Madison Bumgarner and his crowds, they're leading the National League West by 2 games. So looks like the same old teams: Atlanta, St. Louis, San Francisco, New York, the Tigers, and Texas, with Oakland right on the heels in the West. The Cleveland Indians are only 1.5 games out. Would it not be exciting to see the Cleveland Indians make a run into the playoffs? I would love to see the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians play in the World Series. To me, that would be a just a great scenario. The bad news for Chicago, the Cubbies, the Cubs are 16-23, which puts them 9.5 games out. And so it looks like another disappointing year for the Cubs. I have promised you that we're going to get Grady Little, who managed the Boston Red Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers, on. We're going to put that off to the summer a little bit when sports gets a little bit more slowed down, when we get through all the high school stuff and if those playoffs end. And going to get an interesting perspective from Grady Little, and we'll probably try to get Gary Robinson to call in and be on that show too. Two real baseball guys that are, you know, interesting to talk to, funny as the day is long, and both of whom have been thrown out of a lot of games. And as a matter of fact, Grady Little one year led the major league in getting tossed. Now, Coach, have you ever been tossed from a ball game?
Just one.
Pardon me?
Just one.
Coach, I'm having a tough time hearing you again. Have I got you?
I'll hang up the call right back.
Okay. Coach Clark's having phone problems again tonight, and is going to call us right back. And while he's doing that, I do want to run through some of the things that were going on. I want to come back and ask Ricky about getting tossed from a game, because that is something, now that baseball season's in and I see guys are getting tossed right and left, it's kind of like fighting in hockey. You know, the hockey is the only sport where fighting is not only allowed, it's encouraged. And it's in most games that they play, if a fight breaks out, it empties the bench or the dugout, and everybody's about to get involved in hockey. You kind of watch these guys. They throw off their gloves. They throw off their masks. And then they fight for about 30, 40 seconds. And then the referee's almost always right there to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. But, you know, Coach, I was talking about when – Coach Clark, do I have you?
You do.
Okay. Have you ever been thrown out of a game?
One. Just one in 28 years.
And what happened there?
A little misunderstanding between myself and the referee, the umpire. He thought I was talking to him, and I was really telling a kid I wanted to run some play action, and I was really telling the kid that, you know, you're only taking in half the play. That's why it's not working, because, you know, I want to fake the ball off tackle, drop back and throw it out in the flat. Well, he's just calling the flat pass, so it's not fooling anyone. So I'm lighting him up. You know, you're not calling what I'm telling you to call. And here comes the flag at my feet. I'm like, what in the world? No, unsportsmanlike. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the wide receiver. Anyway.
And he wasn't buying it, huh?
He wasn't buying it. So that was my first one. And, you know, it goes to show that when, as a coach, when you come undone, your players come undone. And we had a couple of unsportsmanlike conduct calls right after that. And then, you know, at that point, you know, I'm all over them, because they're not getting control of the game. You know, you had people jumping off sides and that type thing, and they're not making that call. So I think he had heard just about all he could take of my opinion. So he sent me packing. So I went and got up on the top of the activity bus and took a headset with me, and I called a game from up there. We ended up winning, but it wasn't pretty, but we did. And I ended up having to apologize to the school and the student body, and which really, it was my fault. I should have known better.
You know, I'll never forget my first penalty. I was a JV football coach at Independence High School. It was the fall of 1977. And we were playing Garinger at home. And there was this line judge. And back then, you know, you only have four officials for your JV high school football game. So this guy not only had to be a linesman, he had to get downfield. We used to run a little, what we called a trail out pattern, which is really a slot or a wing back going about five and out, or, you know, we could take that right a little bit deeper. But we were only running this kid about 5 yards and out, and the Garinger corner was just cleaning him out every single play. And this referee, he wasn't a chunky guy, Coach. He was fat, okay? This was a big man. And he could not get there in time to make the call. So after the third time that he did it, I was wearing my hair was a lot longer then. I had that old bushy 1970s hair. Fortunately, you've never seen a picture of me with my big old bushy hair. But I went running out on the field, and I had a yellow hat on. So I took my yellow hat off, and I yelled at this guy. I said, if you ain't got the guts to throw something yellow, I will. So I threw my hat. Well, he threw something yellow. And you know the penalty's on you as a coach when they throw it right at your feet.
Exactly.
Okay? So I'm standing there. My hat's about 5 yards out on the field. And there's this yellow flag right down at my feet. And I looked at him and I said, sir, can I get my hat? You know, and of course, we went 15 yards the other direction. He got my hat for me, and then the athletic director fined me $50. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but, Coach, back in 1977, the entire coaching supplement was $250, okay? So for throwing my yellow hat, of course, my players loved it, the fans loved it, but I missed that $50 because that was a fifth of my supplement that went because I decided that I was going to play referee that night. Now, I will remember there was another time that I was coaching with a fella, and we were playing a rival game over at James Martin Middle School. And, you know, we get the kickoff. We go right down the field. I mean, it's textbook James Martin drive. We go about 7-8 plays. You know, 8-9 yards a clip, which is what we want to do. We score, and it's on at that point. We figure, hey, this is going our way. Well, they run the kickback to about our 40-yard line, and then they start getting 7-8 yards a play, and we can't stop them. We can't stop them. Well, the head coach of my football team got so frustrated that there was this play running right in front of our bench. They got another 7 yards. And we stack their kid up. And all of a sudden, it's going to be about 2nd and 3. And then I hear a whistle blow. And I'm thinking, I look over, and to my right is Coach Ricky Clark blowing the play dead from the sideline. And I tell you something, I've been coaching a long, long, long time, and I'm an old man. That is the only time that I've ever heard a coach blow his whistle from the sideline in a game, and the look on the kids' faces for both teams, they looked at you, Ricky, like you were nuts. You remember doing that, or am I making this story up?
Oh, no, I remember doing it. I was zoned out. I was in that zone. I just went right back to practice. Like, okay, we had guys taking bad angles and not sliding down the line of scrimmage, and you know that's why we was having such a fit that first half, because you know we're basically giving them 3-4 yards of carry. You know, they right there off tackle, little sweeps, linebackers are not scraping. Oh my goodness, it was a great coaching moment.
It was, and it's one that I'm never going to let you forget.
That's
something. We might be doing this show. We might be sitting in wheelchairs at the old Confederate coach's home. And I'm going to say to you, Ricky, remember that day playing Ridge Road where you blew the whistle from the sideline? I'll never forget after the game, Alex Walker, who's a good friend, a great coach, you know, gives us fits every time. We usually come out on top of that game, but it's not because Alex's kids don't play as hard as they can, and he coaches as hard as he possibly can. But after the game, he and I were talking. He said, Joe, did Ricky blow the whistle in the middle of a play? I said, he did. It was one of the greatest moments I've ever had in sports because it was one of those things that I'm absolutely never going to let you forget. It was a great moment, and I'm proud to say that I was there on the sideline at James Martin Middle School when my best friend and my head coach and my athletic director took it upon himself to blow a whistle on the play. And I'll never forget Ridge's running back. He looked at you and his eyes got all wide. Like, it was
can he do that?
can't even do that.
Blow the whistle. He's the coach.
You know, and the referee came over and said, "I think I heard a whistle from over here." I said, "I've handled that, sir." And you know, and that's the end of it. I'm a little bit surprised we didn't get another penalty that day. North Carolina High School Athletic Association baseball in Tuesday's second round in the 4A West. South Mecklenburg beats North Davidson 10-0. South Mecklenburg is having a great season. And, you know, Coach, I hope they win the state championship because their head coach, John Tuscan, you know, took his team. They raised a bunch of money for University City YMCA, you know, special projects for a lot of underprivileged kids to have an opportunity. A couple of weeks later, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer at age 29.
Oh,
man's been
married
for 2 years. And, you know, John won the Southwestern 4A this year. He's taken his teams. He's going into the third round of the playoffs. And he will be playing Reagan. He'll be hosting Reagan over there at South Mecklenburg. And, you know, John, I know you don't know a thing about this show. You're going to because over the summer we're going to give you an opportunity to be part of it. But all of our prayers go out to you and your family. And, you know, Ricky Langston Wirtz wrote a great piece in today's Charlotte Observer about, you know, his courage and how he's having to deal with the chemo. He's still coaching his team, even though he is undergoing chemotherapy. And, you know, Hal Bagwell over, you know, a great baseball coach over at Audrey Kell, helping raise some money. And folks, they are trying to raise money for Coach John Tuscan because he's going to have a lot of medical bills. You know, he's probably on the, you know, your state employees, you know, 80% coverage. So he's got that 20%. And, you know, Ricky, we probably ought to talk to Don Mason about seeing if we can't do something to help, you know, John Tuscan out. But, Coach, if, you know, if we're with you in thoughts and prayers, and we certainly hope that South Mecklenburg continues to represent our area, you know, well. And, you know, you're going to play that Reagan team. They beat Reagan, beat Winston-Salem Glen, you know, 6-4. Don't have a score on High Point Central at Northwest Guilford. West Forsyth beat Davie County 4-1. Davie County's always tough in baseball. It seems like they're deep in the playoffs every year. A.C. Reynolds beat Lake Norman 9-2. That's a surprise, to be totally honest with you. Don't have a score on McDowell at Porter Ridge. But listen to this, Coach. Robertson beat Huff 15-0.
Woo!
You know, Huff has got it going on in baseball, but they didn't have it going on last night getting beat 15-0 by Robertson. And Olympic beat Hopewell. You know, Ricky, Barry Schuford took that Olympic football team deep into the playoffs. Their baseball team is going to the third round. They won the state championship in basketball. Olympic's got it going on in sports this year, and you got to wish them the very best. So on Friday, we'll have Reagan at South Mecklenburg. West Forsyth is at Northwest Guilford or High Point. Don't know that one yet. Reynolds will be at McDowell or Porter Ridge. Don't know the winner of that game yet. Olympic is at Skyland Robertson. You know, and if Skyland Robertson can dog Huff, Olympic's going to have their hands full with them, especially when they go to Skyland. In the 3A, also some area teams in action. Asheboro beat Carson 4-2. Marvin Ridge from Union County roughed up on Cox Mill over here in Cabarrus County, 17-7. That's Mark Minnett's team. You know, Mark was a very good baseball coach at Providence and then Independence and then made the jump over to Union County. Don't have a score yet on Weddington and Mount Pleasant. Catholic beat South Rowan 2-1. South Point, that's your old high school area, beat Wes Henderson 5-3. And I tell you something, Coach, Wes Henderson plays some serious baseball. Hickory beat Asheville 7-2. Ford beat North Gaston 4-0. And Patton beat Crest 7-0. So the third round of that 3A playoff puts Asheboro at Marvin Ridge. Catholic will be traveling to either Mount Pleasant or Weddington. And Hickory will be at South Point, and Patton will be at Ford. Had some women's softball high school scores to give to you. West Forsyth 8, Southwest Guilford 0, Southeast Guilford 2, Winston-Salem Glen 1. Don't have a score on Butler at South Alamance. North Davidson beat Audrey Kell 9-0, which is so North Davidson must have it going on because that Audrey Kell squad's a pretty good squad. Alexander Central beat McDowell 6-0. Lake Norman's still in it, beating Sun Valley 5-1. Porter Ridge beat Robertson 8-2. And Olympics. Here's another team from Olympic going to the third round, Coach. Their softball women beat South Caldwell 5-2. So that Friday third round action will have Northwest Forsyth at Southeast Guilford. The winner of the Butler Southern Alamance game will be at North Davidson. Alexander Central's at Lake Norman, and Olympic is at Porter Ridge. So that's some exciting times there for these kids as they go into their playoffs, and we certainly wish them all the best. And again, we want to, you know, give our best wishes to Coach John Tuscan of South Mecklenburg Sabres, who won the Southwestern 4A and is now in the third round of the playoffs. But he's in a bigger playoff, Coach, and, you know, fighting that cancer and going through that chemotherapy. And his you know, he has all of our best wishes and our thoughts and our prayers.
Yes, and you know, Joe, he's still going out there coaching. You can only think of, you know, how many days you've walked up that hill to go to football practice, and you know, you just got out the courtroom, and you know, I'm coming out of the gym with this, that, and the other on my mind. You know, it could be a bad day in the courtroom, or you know, a kid in class that decide they don't want to follow procedure and give you a hard time, or whatever. And you know, you get up on that practice field, the kids don't expect less of you because you've had a bad day. You
they
know,
don't.
They expect you to still come out and coach. And I have never gone up that hill in a bad mood that before that practice was over, one of those knuckleheads didn't do something to just make you stand there and laugh till you almost cry. It's a special thing that we do. And, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, doing it for the kids, doing it for the kids. But a lot of times it's for ourselves as well. Athletes are some that, you know, you get to see a side of them that most people don't see. You almost get to see a side of the athlete that their parents don't see. You know, they can be serious. They can be serious 1 minute. And, you know, you got them in the huddle and you giving them a fit about what they're not doing right, and this is what they need to do, and one of them will pass gas. They're like, okay, you just ruined my speech. You know, it's that type thing that keeps us coming back, and I think John's absolutely right. Stay out there with what makes you happy, because that's going to be important. That's going to be important as he battles cancer.
It really is, and you know, it takes a lot of courage to, you know, we every day. You know, Ricky, we face the possibility that today could be our last day, and you know, I'm 56 years old, and I have no regrets. You know, there've been a lot of times that you and I have talked about this season being our last season. But Coach, can you really imagine doing something other than coaching football from August until November?
I cannot, but I'm gonna have to work on my imagination.
You say that. But, you know, Ricky, we have had an opportunity to, you know, some of the, you know, the question we were asking last night, you know, some of the greatest high school ball players that we've ever seen. You know, we've had an opportunity to not just see those kids, but to coach them. And, you know, one of the kids that we didn't mention last night, one of the best high school football players that I've seen was Lorenz Bryan. You know that? Lorenz, I mean, watching him develop, I mean, he's, I guess he'll be down at the University of South Carolina going ahead and enrolling to start in those, you know, summer sessions to get him academically ready to, you know, to compete with South Carolina and get a little bit of a head start on that. But, you know, Ricky, we've been really fortunate because we really have seen some of the great high school players and coached them. I mean, you know, Holloman, you know, drafted by the Cowboys, I mean, playing for UH. And so, you know, we really have been blessed. And, you know, you think about a guy like John, 29 years old, 7 years into his career. You know, I truly hope that he gets a full recovery. And according to the article, it's very treatable. But, you know, I hope that when he's 55, he'll be able to have conversations like the ones that we're having right now. Coach, we're down to 1 minute. And as always, the last minute of the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford Show on WDCU Daniel Clarkless Talk Radio, on Internet Radio, Blog Talk Radio. Last 50 seconds belongs to you, Coach.
As we head to the end of the school year, we got EOGs on Monday for all the parents that are out there listening. Make sure those jokers get to bed early, early Sunday night, and get up and get a good breakfast. Any notes that they have for the EOGs, they should read over that stuff this weekend, and you know, a lot of us are not aware, but CMS will not be retesting this year.
And that's a change, isn't it?
That's a huge change. Huge change. There's no do-over. You know, you can't go in there and have a bad day on Monday and say, well, you know, I'll retest the following week. The only kids that are being retested are the kids that are absent that day. Oh, you know.
Well, that is excellent advice. And, folks, that's the end of our show time tonight. He's Coach Ricky Clark. I'm Coach Joe Ledford. This is WDCU Daniel Clark. Let's Talk Radio, and we'll be back with you next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. For Coach Ricky Clark, I'm Coach Joe Ledford. We'll see you then.